Good afternoon, Susan McGraw here, and welcome to this edition of the WHFR Journal for the last Friday in the month of March. Today is the 29th of March, 2024. Next time we talk, it will be April, I'm sure. Looking forward to that. We have had some crazy ups and downs with the weather, as we've all experienced here in the Metro Detroit area in particular, and you know, frankly, around the nation. So we're going to get into some interesting topics today. I'm excited, by the way, to do a little preview for next week's program. We're going to talk to a very good friend of Henry Ford College, an employee here, and also a new friend of WHFR's, and his name is Jesse Mason. He's an astronomer and works in the physics and astronomy department, and he's going to talk all about an exciting STEM day, a family STEM day coming up, and we are looking forward to learning more about that. You can always, by the way, check out our WHFR website for any of these types of details. This one's coming up in a couple of weeks. In addition, Jesse's going to talk with us a little bit about the upcoming eclipse. That's right, the solar eclipse that is forthcoming. So we're going to look forward to some expert information about that as well. In the meantime, looking forward to the second edition, or the second episode, if you will, in today's edition of the journal. We're going to talk with some friends from the HFC Theater Department about this brilliant project that they've undertaken. It all spotlights and focuses on the Detroit Wall. You might have heard of the Detroit Wall or the Detroit Wall Project. Well, our team got creative, decided to write a theatrical piece based on that piece of history from the Detroit community, and they're going to be presenting it here at our Adria Auditorium coming up on the 12th and 13th of April. It will be, I assure you, a must-not-miss event. So we're going to talk more about that in just a little bit. Also, some things going on around and on campus. My goodness, the 5101 restaurant is kicking and going gangbusters with local food and lots of special ways and opportunities to create something beautiful out of very simple ingredients. By the way, the 5101 always helps out this college community, and it literally gives our students an opportunity to be chefs and be front house servers and so on here in our restaurant, located right here on the campus of Henry Ford College, 5101 Evergreen Road in Dearborn, thus the 5101 name of the restaurant. So lots of great things coming up, and we are truly excited to be welcoming in spring. Here's another little teaser for you, the WHFR Radiothon. It's our 1 week out of the year pledge drive. You're probably familiar with it. Thank you if you've contributed to it in the past. You know, 60% of our operating budget comes from our donors, just like you, from our loyal listeners, and we are truly grateful for that. We couldn't literally operate without you. So we will take to the airwaves, and that will be coming up in the middle of April, April 14th through the 20th, in fact. And we're going to be, telling you about all the things that your contribution does to help benefit our radio station. So just a tease, not an official ask just yet, but we will look forward to doing that again in a couple of weeks. In addition, the spotlight this year is going to be on our volunteers. That's the theme of Radiothon 2024. For a spotlight on our volunteers and our students, because you may or may not realize that every person that does a radio show here at WHFR is, yes, in fact, a volunteer. So we are a non-commercial educational public station, and therefore rely on support to keep the station operating, and we do not pay our DJs or our, you know, the behind the scenes people as well. We have a small group of officers that receive a small stipend to help operate the station along with myself as general manager. But everybody on the air is on the air and doing it because they love it, because they want to learn more about broadcast, and because it is their passion. So first of all, I say give them some grace, give us some grace. But secondly, do hope you understand how your contribution supports this process. So thank you in advance again for that support. But for our first item of business today, we are going to be talking about a really neat opportunity to get up close and personal to some art in this community. So it is the 2024 annual Henry Ford College Student Fine Arts and Digital and Graphic graphic arts exhibition. We're going to have Steve Glazer, who is the head of the art area, instructor in art and director of exhibitions here at Henry Ford College. He's going to join us in just a moment and talk all about that. But I wanted to give you the heads up on what's forthcoming on this hour. Do stay with us.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw with you. As I mentioned before our first quick break, the 2024 annual, I like the word annual, we'll circle back to that in a minute, Henry Ford College Student Fine Arts and Digital and Graphic Arts Exhibition is taking place. It is opening, in fact, this Monday, April the 1st, 4 to 7 p.m. here at Henry Ford College. And rather than me try to give you the details that I certainly am not an expert at, I thought I'd bring the expert himself into our show today. And that is the one and only Steve Glazer to tell us a little bit about this show.
This is actually the first full show since the renovation. And I haven't done any publicity about that because I'm still keeping fingers crossed that everything goes okay. This will be the first time that we've ever had a projector in the gallery to use for animation or digital new media art. That's a lot of fun just waiting to see that actually happening.
We will make it work. Absolutely. So we're going to call this, it is an annual event, and move from here moving forward, every year is the plan. Yes.
That's the plan. And it was annual for, I don't know how many years, up until 2020.
Amazing.
Yeah, I came here in 2004 and it had been a regular thing since going back before that.
Got it. So we talk, I think the most important word in that long title is not the word annual, but is the word student. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
It's a faculty selected show from the best work in all of the studio art or fine art, and then graphic design, which is the real name of the program is Digital and Graphic Arts. Faculty selected the best work from all of our classes. It's hung salon style, which means instead of having a nice even row at eye level across the room, it's hung from about a foot and a half off the floor in some areas to about 8-10 feet tall, because I was on a 3 or 4 step ladder yesterday hanging the top pieces. Yeah, that style goes back at least to mid-19th century France, and hanging shows from the floor up to ceiling level.
Wow. So there is something to be said about not only what's being exhibited, but the way it's being exhibited, mm-hmm. isn't there?
It is. Well, and this gives an opportunity for more students to be part, which I feel is quite important. Being at a community college, it means something. Even though it's not a juried selection by an outside juror, the fact that the faculty are selecting the work, should mean something to the students that are in it. I know some of the students don't give it a lot of thought, but they should. And while it's not a resume step that you would keep once you were done with graduate school and move on beyond that, if you're just starting out, community college level, this is your first, or if you've been in them before, or you're in them next year, since there really wasn't before except 2019, those are how you start building a resume. And then you get to the point where you no longer need those shows, but as you're starting out, you do.
This show opens this coming Monday, so I'm really glad we got to talk to you about it today. What will we expect in terms of access to the show? Will there be a reception?
There will be a reception Monday evening from 4 to 7. We may try to do another one during the second week. I don't know yet, because I know this is late advertising. I wasn't sure that everyone would cooperate, that the gods of being around HFC would cooperate.
Well, it sounds like they have. So that's,
we got the projector installed a week and a half ago, which that's basically the last piece that I know of as far as the renovation. So that was cool because before that it was like, okay, we wanted this gallery to be able to display new media work, but we had no way to do it. So now we have that, providing a computer can access whether either YouTube or a disk or drive that has the information on it. All new lighting. I haven't even worked with it in half of the gallery yet because I have to put together a new ladder that reaches high enough because I can't reach it on the old ladder. That's going to be part of this weekend's journey, figuring out which lights we're using because we have more lights than we could ever use at one time, which also frustrates me when I walk into the student workers and they have every light switch turned on. It's like, yeah. It's like daylight on a bright sunny day in there, and it's like it doesn't need to be that light.
Oh, that's funny. But the reason for those kinds of things, it's options, right? It's the
Yeah, it
ability
gives us
to adjust.
much more options than we ever had before. There's even their LED bulbs that match typical museum lighting, which is warm lighting. We had the choice of doing that or daylight, and not enough museums, galleries have moved to daylight yet, even though many artists favor it. It's not to stand by yet. The original idea was to have lights that you could filter back and forth, but then that turned out to be too pricey. So I was given a choice. Do you want daylight or do you want, warm lights? And emailed a few people that are gallery directors elsewhere, and they're still using warm lights.
Well, I know many, many people that have been to the Sisson Gallery in the past, again, located here on the main campus, 5101 Evergreen Road here in Dearborn, the main campus of Henry Ford College, and the F building, the Fine Arts building, the
The
very
Mackenzie
back
Fine
campus.
Arts Building.
Mackenzie Fine Arts Building. That's absolutely true. It says F, but it is the Mackenzie Fine Arts Building. For people that haven't been to the gallery since pre all of this stuff, they're in for quite a surprise, quite a pleasant surprise,
Yes.
I'm sure. And for those people that have never been to the Henry Ford College Sisson Art Gallery, also, I think, going to be
It
pleasantly
looks like a
surprised.
professional gallery now.
Yeah.
And it probably did the way it was when the building was first built, which would have been in the 70s. But a lot has changed, and a lot of, stylistically, home furnishing has changed. So the way a professional gallery looks has definitely changed. The amount of lighting used. I remember when I was in undergraduate school, it wasn't surprising to see colored mats around pieces. And that's like, no, that's not coming into this gallery type thing. It's like mats are generally like white or black professionally now, or maybe a cream like an off-white, but that's about it.
Are there set hours at this point, Steve, for
At
when you can show
this
up?
point, set hours will be after Monday. Because we'll be doing the lights, doing all the last minute stuff Monday. So it'll be Monday, 4 to 7, Tuesday, 10 to 4, Thursday, 10 to 4, Wednesday, 10 to 8 p.m. And then following week, 10 to 4, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and 10 to 8 on Wednesday.
So that late night is there in the middle of the week each week. I suspect we can find this information on the website of HFC.
I can't promise you because this has all happened so quick that we're able to pull it off.
This is like kind of like breaking news, Steve, honestly. Very
In
cool.
fact, it's like I wasn't comfortable expressing it to Brad Romans, our dean, until this morning, when I knew it was going to happen. Because I kept waiting, okay, something's going to happen, or something could happen that would stall things. I got about two-thirds of the stuff I'm responsible for hanging up on the wall last night, and have to do the rest tonight. And Patty Goodell's working on labels. Vicki Shepherd with some of the graphic design staff will be hanging that section. And Karen Larson Volz is hanging both digital and darkroom photo.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a pretty full show.
It will be. I'm sure that I hung about 100 pieces last night.
Wow.
And that's between two-dimensional design classes, color theory class, both fall and winter semester, a bunch of drawing classes, and that's as far as I got. I didn't get to the painting classes.
How many courses are represented in this exhibition, Steve?
Probably about a dozen, counting all the Photoshop classes and stuff. as far as the studio program, I know there's two-dimensional design, drawing one, color theory, three-dimensional design, drawing two, life drawing, painting, ceramics, photography. So there's, you know, multiple sections of ceramics, multiple sections of life drawing, of painting.
There are a lot of classes being represented and a lot of students.
Oh, and digital media.
There you go.
I'm trying to think if there's anything, both darkroom and digital photo.
So I think some people are thinking to themselves, geez, I didn't even know Henry Ford College had all those kinds of classes. So it's kind of nice to be able to talk about them and showcase them, which
is the
point of this, right?
It is. That means a lot that finally we can show to the community what we're doing and everything that we can do here, because most people don't realize that.
When we look forward to a show like this, I suspect that this would really appeal to just about anybody that loves art or that wants to support the gallery, that wants to support students, our students here at Henry Ford College, because again, this isn't every piece of work done by every student through the semester. This is the best of the best.
Best of our selected by each faculty member.
If somebody wanted to learn more, Steve, not only about the event taking place on Monday, April 1st from 4 to 7, the reception, where, by the way, there will be light refreshments served, but also the hours for the show and so on, can they just reach out to you directly?
Yes. Email sglazer, sglazer at hfcc.edu.
Thank you so much, Steve, for your time. All the best with this show. Can't wait to see it. And I know it's going to be great. So welcome back.
Thank you so much, Susan, for taking the time to do this interview.
We've got more on the way. Stay with us.
Hey, Dad, how do airplanes fly? What's in this box? Is this tree good for climbing? How are babies made? What does this thing do?
Kids are curious about everything, including guns. Talking to them about gun safety in your home is a good first step, but you can do more. Always keep your guns locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn how to make your home safer at nfamilyfire.org. That's nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by N Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. She wasn't even really sure where she was at.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it. I felt so much better after my son told me, Mom, we'll figure it out.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to this segment of the WHFR Journal. It is always a pleasure to get to feature projects that our students are working on and presenting to our community at our campus, as well as our community at large. And boy, do we have one to share with you. So excited to be bringing in a conversation about the Detroit Wall Project. We have with us via Zoom, Dr. John Michael Saffel, who is our theater director here at Henry Ford College and is the director of this particular presentation that we're going to be talking more about. We also have joining us some members of the cast, as well as someone doing some research on this project to help make it as magnificent as I know it's going to be. So let me introduce our group. I mentioned Dr. John, as our students call him very kindly. We also have with us Esther El-Khoury, who is in the dramaturgy component of this project, research interviews. We're going to hear more about what Esther's take has been on everything leading up to this Detroit Wall Project presentation. We also have our wonderful actor, Zuri Jamal, joining us. We all know Zuri. We should if we don't, and you'll have a chance to get to know her more coming up in mid-April at the Henry Ford College Theater. And then Sydney Lane is joining us today, and she as well is an actor on this project. So let's jump in. First and foremost, welcome to all of you. Thank you for being with us on the Journal today. So excited to learn more about what you're doing. So now we get to take a deep breath and jump in. You ready? Yes, yes, yes.
Happy to be here. Yeah.
Great.
Thank you, Susan.
Terrific. Yep. So this is subject matter that, as I understand it, has not been focused on in theater, perhaps ever, if not, you know, very rarely. And this is an undertaking that I understand comes through a need to share information, a desire to educate our community, an interest to showcase our talent. So this is a multifaceted project that our own Dr. John Michael Seufel jumped into many, many, many months ago, maybe even a year or more. So let's start with sort of the history of how the Detroit Wall Project came to be here at Henry Ford College. And I think through that, we're going to learn about how it came to be literally and historically, as I understand, over 80 years ago, the Burwood Wall turning into this amazing process, this reinvention, if you will. And we get the pleasure of learning all about it. Dr. John, tell us a little bit about why this project and why now.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you so much. One of the things I want to sort of lovingly do is define one of the words that you used. You talked about it being an educational piece, and I absolutely agree. But one of the things that I want to make sure we emphasize is that it's not educational as in a lecture to the audience. And the real attempt with this was to start a conversation. I just moved to Michigan just over a year ago, and so I'm still exploring and really getting to know my new home. And one of the things that really surprised me and struck me about the area after living lots of other places, what was this sort of clear demarcation from one town to the next and one neighborhood to the next, not only economically, but often racially and things. And so there is this sense of sort of segregation around an area that prides itself on its diversity. And I was fascinated by that. That conversation between those two ideas that seem so antithetical to each other. And so as I was looking at that and researching more and more about my new home, I came across the story of the Burwood Wall, which is really what this project is all about, and I'm sure we'll be talking about throughout this. But specifically, this wall, which had first gone up as unquestionably as a tool of segregation. And then over the years has become people's backyards and is part of a park. And more recently has become a community art project. And people came together around it and murals and all sorts of positive things on this unquestionably negative sort of historical artifact. And then to the point of it now being granted a historical marker by the state. This fascinating conversation that we've had throughout our country about what do we do with history? What do we do with historical landmarks? What do we do with things from the past that we are ashamed of? And how do we either reclaim those or do we tear them down or what do we do with it? And here is this piece that's right in our neighborhood and it's standing there and kids play basketball in front of it every single day. And what does that mean? And so what I really wanted to do was to introduce this conversation of, okay, it's part of all of our neighborhood. Whoever it is, if you live here, this is part of your home. How do we feel about that? And if I could, we've spoken on the show a couple of times in the past about how much of my own background is in disability studies. And one of my favorite projects I ever worked on was a photography exhibit about a gentleman who had taken photos of people who had really horrific scars, and either from accidents or from medical trauma or what have you, but had these scars, and over time decided not just to tattoo over them, but to tattoo them in such a way that it turned the scar itself into a work of art, that it highlighted the scar while finding a way to make expressive in their own. And that struck me as so similar to this idea of this wall. And as I've talked about that exhibit over the years, a lot of people have had really mixed reactions. Well, why would you want to highlight that? Or how great it is that you're highlighting it. And that same dichotomy really struck me here. So I thought, well, I'll bring it to the students and we'll have a conversation. And I had no idea where it would lead. It was just say, this is part of our community. Let's spend the next 3 months figuring it out. And so the hope is certainly that between the actors and now very soon the audience, they will join into that conversation together with us. And again, we will continue not to lecture to them, but to have that conversation and we'll all figure it out together.
Thank you for that. That's a tremendous backstory on this project and a sort of a reiteration of the fact that you've only been here for not much over a year. It seems like you've been with us forever, I'll tell you. And that's, I mean that in a very good way. And I'm sure the students agree with you on that. But I think what's fascinating here is that in the process of decision-making, you incorporate the student population. You say, how do you feel about this? So that our students can get invested in, you know, literally not only the decision-making of yes or no, but the decision-making of how much, how little, you know, which way, and so on. And I think this presentation is going to speak to that. I've had the pleasure of getting a little bit of background information about what's going on, or what will be going on, certainly in April, relative to the performances. But this is, and I mean this in a great way, this is kind of going to be all over the place, because when we speak about the perspective of the Detroit Wall, the Burwood Wall, it does come from that legacy of pain and, you know, just extreme racial tension and racism and just all those bad things, as you mentioned. But then we think about Detroit and its revitalization, and also things that were even going on, you know, 70, 80 years ago, musically, related to culture, related to art, related to things as simple as food. You know, we are a legacy town for some amazing things. And I suspect that those things are going to come out in this story as well. So it's not all going to be, you know, Dr. John's learning about this Detroit Wall and let's talk about the bad stuff, but let's also sort of see if we can balance with some of those other things that have come along the way. And so while I appreciate your perspective of kind of seeing this for the first time yourself as a, you know, as a Detroit transplant, also the fact that there are going to be so many diverse perspectives presented in this. And I think that's where the students are going to be coming in. Yes, our performers, as well as, in this case, Esther, who has done research to help make this as authentic and representative as it can be, because there are a million ways to spin this, right? There are a million ways to approach a creative endeavor like this. So if I may, I'd like to scooch over to Esther here for a minute and kind of see what this has been like for you, Esther. And we don't want to give away too much, of course, but is that an accurate assessment? Are we going to see a variety of these different things coming out through this performance?
Absolutely. It's going to be a massive collage of a lot of elements of our history. Like you said, it is 80 years plus of covering Detroit's struggles and triumphs and community. In my research, it's been a lot of reading about the hardships and a lot of the facts of how the wall itself was a physical representation of the redlining that was done in 41, which was when the wall was erected, excluding a lot of Black neighborhoods from the federal loans that were available. So it's been a pretty interesting look, and hard look in a lot of places at that history.
And so we absolutely have that. And there are some unflinching looks at those and at the building of I-375 and that. And yet there are also these moments, this explosion of excitement and love around Motown. And Barry Gordon is in there, and Ali Willis is in there, and there are all these voices there, not to mention people like Chaz Miller, who came in and was painting the wall. And there really is this attempt at capturing sort of the zeitgeist and the vibe and the soul of Detroit. And not only this idea of, exactly as you were just saying, Susan, not only this idea of the hardships that are there, but also what makes Detroit, Detroit. There are so many passages where we specifically focus on, you know, 313 Detroit against everybody, and that idea of the excitement and our section of things I love about Detroit. So it's full of a lot of pride and a lot of hometown heart throughout it as we're talking about this whole thing. Because really, if it was just a story of this is a horrible thing that happened, right, then we should all just move. like there's nothing good about this place and why even deal with it? But it's not. It's the exact opposite. Is look at how amazing our community is. And this scar on our community is certainly part of that story. Not all of our amazing story is always pretty, but it is all part of our amazing story. And I think we really do try to hit that from those multiple perspectives. And the music, oh, we have a student sound designer, and he has been working really hard, and we have some deep cuts in there. It's not just the pop radio Aretha that we got. We've got some deep cuts and wonderful music going all throughout the thing. I think people will really, really, really enjoy that.
I'll tell you, I can't really comprehend the way this is all going to come together, because you know, there's just so many different variables at play. But I also can't help but feeling a little bit emotional about it. You know, just thinking about it and growing up in this community with, you know, older siblings and parents and so on, I can relate to some of the things that you're talking about. It's a little bit, I think triggering is a strong word, but just awakening, you know, it's kind of awakening some things, both good and bad, in my mind. And I'm just going to back to Esther just for a quick minute. As a dramaturge, Esther, you probably learn some things that you had no clue, you know, existed, and isn't that the way it's supposed to be? But can you speak to maybe some of the research that you did, some of the people that you talked to? Because this wasn't a play that was handed to you all, you know, and like, okay, we're gonna perform Fiddler on the Roof. You know, that's a pre-existing body of work. This was created for this purpose. So, can you speak to sort of how that part came together from your perspective?
Absolutely. It began with a lot of digging through the Detroit Historical Archives and going through and reading the oral histories and experiences of people who went through the riots in the 60s. And it was reaching out to people who wanted to talk about their experiences from even around our HFC community. And also I went through just honestly learning about the wall itself existing, even though I've had family that's lived in Detroit back in the 80s, even though we moved out to Lansing. And yeah, it's been a pretty interesting look, specifically at a lot of things that I had no clue about.
Well, isn't it that intersection between, you know, information, education, and art, certainly, that I think is what makes this project so impactful, and I think what is going to be so beautiful and brilliant and powerful and entertaining. And yes, I'm using those big fancy words, and I haven't even seen it yet, but you know, not like I'm trying to keep the bar this high, but I know it's going to be through the roof. Dr. John, in the decision-making part of this whole thing, because you only have so much time with people on a stage, you know, you only have so much time to get it ready, and you only have, you know, so many stories you can tell in the course of a performance. What was that like? Tell us about that. And also, if you would, share a little bit about what we should expect sort of visually. And you talked a little bit about the music, and we'll get into a little bit more of that. But as we're talking about things like, you know, greed and bigotry and, you know, practically war zone, you know, times, but also raising families and loving each other and coming together for the greater good and so on. Boy, this could just go anywhere. So how'd you make those decisions, and what's it going to look like for us?
Sure. Yeah, there were sort of two huge decisions that went into this, I think really encapsulate what the show is. And the first one was, for anyone that's ever been to the Adre Auditorium, which is where this is going to be performed, it is not going to be set up as you may be used to, where we have the large 300-seat audience and then there's the stage. Instead, we have built a wall in front of that audience, and instead the audience members will be joining us on the stage. And we have set it up so that we are performing in the round, meaning the audience is on all four sides of us. And it seats in this configuration right under 70 people. So it's a very, very intimate space. No one would be further than three rows back at any time. And this sense of this is not us lecturing to a group. It really is this community conversation around it, and that we can all sort of own exactly what's going on stage. As Esther was saying, you know, we reached out to people in the community and interviewed them. So there will be people in the audience that hear their words being said back to them. It really is that sense of all of us up there being part of this. So in terms of that sense of capturing what it means to be part of the community, we hope that the audience, and I don't want to give the impression that it's audience participation or anything, you should feel free to come and not be worried that we're going to be set you in any way. But just that sense that we're all up here facing each other and doing, you know, doing this performance as a community on stage. So that was part of it, just that sense of let us always keep it to the simple idea of us and our story. The second part, though, yes, we could have, this could have been a 5-hour project. Nobody wants it to be a 5-hour project, though. We went into this and said, we really need to keep this to about an hour, under an hour, because this is big. And there's only so much anyone can take in before they start to go, okay, it's too much. I need to break this up. So despite worlds of information, we approached it almost like a martini glass, if you'll forgive sort of the reference. But this idea of this funnel that really goes down, and we threw any ideas in at the beginning. And we had so much wonderful material and so many wonderful interviews that we could have used. And in the end, we started looking for, okay, where are we repeating ourselves? Where are we doing things? Some really beautiful sentiments that were gorgeous and deserve to be heard. But in the end, really breaking it down till we got to the most essential ideas over the course of just under an hour to take us from, wait, how did we have a wall to begin with, through the effects of it and its idea over the years, to where are we today looking forward? So we go in a roughly chronological order, but really those essential things that are all designed just to get the audience, when they walk out the door at the end, sort of talking and sort of thinking, and now how do I feel about all of this?
Thank you for that. To remind our listeners, this is the WHFR Journal. We are speaking about the upcoming Detroit Wall Project. It will be a presentation through the HSC Theater Department here at the Adria Auditorium at Henry Ford College, taking place the weekend of April 12th and 13th. We'll talk more about that in just a little bit, but you have not missed it. There is absolutely an opportunity to participate, to enjoy this presentation. It's going to be amazing. And we're speaking today with Dr. John Michael Seffel, who is the theater director and the director of this presentation. We're also speaking with Esther El Khoury, who is handling the now we've got actors here too, so I don't want to say the hardest part because then I'm going to, you know, we're going to have some issues there, but a very challenging role in dramaturgy and collecting and assessing and frankly putting together the content, frankly. Also, Zuri Jamal is joining us, and she is one of the performers for this presentation, and then Sydney Lane joining us as well. Let's bring the talent in for just a moment, shall we? So, yes, you are a talent, Zuri and Sydney. As I understand it, you are not really playing a character in this presentation. You're actually kind of playing yourselves as the mouthpieces, sort of the vessel for these stories to come out of. That sounds maybe a little intimidating. That's a lot of pressure, but at the same time, kind of freeing, because you get to really embody a variety of different, you know, different perspectives. So, Zuri, let's start with you. How are you feeling about all this, and what's the preparation been like?
I would say overall, it feels really like a new thing. I mean, I've seen this kind of work being done at Henry Ford before with a complete works of Shakespeare, abridged. So it's kind of like that, except it's kind of like a more serious aspect. I would say it's kind of new, and I kind of like it because it's not like I'm pretending to be someone. It's like I'm giving their voices into the play, and I actually really like it. I actually find it's actually more entertaining.
Thank you. Interesting. Sydney, how about you? What's your perspective like?
You know, not to be so puerile with my choice of quotation, but, you know, someone said, with great power comes great responsibility. And we have to do that. We are the, like you said, the vessels in which the people of Detroit, the Detroit natives, the just communities here, we have to be that spokesperson, for the stage. So yeah, I find it very fun. It's fun. It's fun. It's exciting.
So you're both using terms that one would hope and expect to have going out on a Saturday night, or you know, or just going to the theater to experience something, whether it is incredibly powerful and impactful or purely for entertainment purposes. So because you're saying things like profound, great, you know, great responsibility, love the quote, by the way, that web-slinging genius that you took it from, and Zuri talking about, you know, kind of embracing this approach, being that voice, it really sounds like we're going to get a little bit of everything in this play. And I think that means it will probably in some way connect with and appeal to just about anybody coming in to see it, which is brilliant and genius, and also I think very cool. Dr. John, was that intentional? And tell us a little bit about the sort of the molding of that process.
Yeah, absolutely. I think from the very beginning of this project, I kept describing it as, if you live anywhere near here, then this is part of your community, whether you've ever thought of it as being part of your community or not. And now, without question, that's not meant to erase anything. Without question, depending on who you are, your family background, all those sorts of things, race, economics, etc., yes, there may be a different relationship there with it, but there's still a relationship. Even if that relationship has been, gee, I've never heard of it, and that seems weird. I feel like I should have heard of this thing. What does that mean, right? All of us, if we are here, have some relationship. And so we really attempted to approach this thing through that lens, that everybody has something to say about it, that everybody, et cetera. I remember at one point in the rehearsals, one of my actors who lives in Southfield, had a moment where he was feeling insecure. And he said, well, I'm not actually from Detroit. Right? Does my voice matter in this? I was like, your voice matters almost, you know, almost more, in the sense that we're going to have all of these different audience members coming in with this range, this spectrum of relationships to what it means to be from Detroit or Metro Detroit, to what it means for all these things, from the families who did move away versus the families that came. And this idea of making sure that we're representing all of these different voices. I've tried my best to be the, hey, I just got here, I don't know anything, let me keep those folks in the audience in mind. All the way through people who in the cast who have realized, man, I just live a couple blocks from this thing. And some of the people we've talked to, including somebody who looks out, you know, their door and can see the wall every single day. And all of those different perspectives, and recognizing that they're all sort of equally valid in the conversation that we're attempting to have. Again, this is part of all of our community. If you are within the listening range of this radio station, then it's part of your community and it's worth thinking about and talking about.
Thank you for the opportunity for all of us to be able to do that. We talk about, you know, what's in the history books, you know, rewriting history, changing history, what are we leaving out that we should be talking about, and so on. And I think one of the biggest things that has come out of these conversations of late is that when history is ignored or, you know, or forgotten, it just doesn't serve a purpose to honor or to support whatever legacy might be coming out of it. And also, it doesn't necessarily help as we look to the future. So when you talk about the idea of hoping that this will create a conversation opportunity for people going through the experience in the way you're presenting it, I think that would, you know, from my perspective, be perhaps one of the highest honors for representing those people that suffered and that lost family and, you know, life and experience through the history of this Detroit wall. So like any history that has its dark and, you know, and awful days, honoring and spotlighting that can be that legacy that we hope we can embrace and learn from, and also be able to continue to share with others, so that you know, when other people come into town, we can say, hey, by the way, I heard about this thing, let's go look at it, you know, let's go drive there and check it out, or let's walk there, ride our bikes, whatever.
One thing that I really has surprised me about this project, because again, when we began, as you said, we had no script. We were building it as we went. And so it sort of went where rehearsals took us. And one of my favorite parts about it is that there's a great degree of student journaling, student answers that are within this from each of the different students there. And to return to this idea, even to sort of pull back from the idea of specifically the Berwyn Wall, and just to think of it as, okay, what about these painful things in history? What do we do with those? And to witness how some of the actors involved have talked about, you know, it's changed my view of the world. It hurts to now know this. And, you know, is it a good thing that we've done this? And other people saying, you know, it's really great to know this. I feel more powerful because of it. And that fault line, that sort of uncomfortable area that I think, again, everyone in our country is dealing with, what do we do with the painful past? Do we try to tamp it down so we can just move on and be happy? Or can that never happen unless we sit with it for a little while? Even that has been sort of part of this process as we work through it. And I'm glad to say we haven't come up with an answer, because it is such an individual idea. And we've tried to celebrate that fact, that at the end, each of the actors, and I hope each of the audience, are encouraged to sort of come to that place on their own.
It's what good art should do, isn't it? It's brilliant. I don't want to put everybody on the spot, but, you know, I'm going to, because that's what I do. If you individually can think of maybe one thing that you are sort of taking away from this, maybe one fun fact that you discovered about this community, or one emotion that came out that you weren't anticipating, or one person that you connected with that you'll never forget, you know, something like that just related to this project. I probably won't be able to debrief, you know, after the middle of April. So I'm going to ask you now and put you on the spot and ask you now, even though the performances haven't officially taken place yet, at this stage of the game, Esther, I'll start with you. What would just be one thing that comes to your mind? Out of probably dozens. I recognize that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have to say the deep and resounding feeling that this is a very important history to tell, and that the fact that so many Detroiters have no clue that this exists, that I feel that the way we are telling this story is critical to explaining the beautiful community that has come up around this wall in spite of all of the struggle. That is the one thing, is just the importance of this and understanding all of the facets of it.
Thank you. Azuri, how about you?
What I've taken from this entire experience is that not only did it happen in Detroit, but it merely happened like a few blocks from me. And I live in Boston Edison Historic District, and I'm right near 12th Street, where actually there's a plaque and a mural about the 67 riots, which we talk about in Detroit Wall Project. And I just find it like so interesting that a lot of history that you may not know about Detroit or like where you live is actually like right near you. And it's quite fascinating that you get to like learn more deeper about it and just like experience firsthand, because my parents were around, like they were literally children when the 67 riots were happening. So being able to like ask my mother, well, not really my mother because she's from Jamaica, but like get that experience and talk to them about it, like what were your like firsthand experiences? Like what did you think about it? It's actually like kind of really, what's the term? Interesting to just learn that history about the city that you like you've been born and raised into.
Like you found out something new that was there the whole time, but without this opportunity, you maybe it would have passed you by. So, yeah, that's
great. Exactly.
Thank you, Zuri. Sydney, how about you? Some takeaway from this experience.
Perspective is everything. That is everything. especially when it comes to situations like this. I got a chance to chat with a resident of the 8 Mile in Mendota area, and the way she was describing the wall to me was beautiful, almost as if it was this pillar, this sturdy root in their neighborhood that brought strangely positivity. And I had a lot of opinions about the Detroit Wall when I first heard about it. I had a lot of opinions. But I got a chance to talk with her, and she really shifted my perspective. And actually, on that same note, I want to point out that a lot of the Detroit residents outside of that area had absolutely no clue, but that neighborhood is alive and well. They are still there. They are still standing. Most of the residents have been there 60 years. So they're not just some poor, unfortunate people who had to suffer through, you know, racial injustice. They are thriving and living and have such a great sense of community. So I would definitely have to say from what I was able to take from the Detroit Wall Project was to always remember that perspective is everything.
Thank you. Dr. John, you've got quite a group here, I'll tell you. Already we know this is going to be brilliant. I asked the others the question. I suppose I can ask you the same question, so as not to leave you out, perhaps.
And sure.
One thing in particular.
To actually build off of Sydney's beautiful, beautiful point there. One of the things I've loved is as we've talked to people, sure, there's the conversations about the wall and there's conversations about policing and all sorts of things. There's also conversations about Pablo Island, and there's also conversations about, you know, everyone has a favorite DJ over the years. And there's all these conversations about just the love for the city and the day. I'm going to cancel our show right now. The day in rehearsal, I mentioned I don't like Faygo, and they almost kicked me out of the room. The degree
this interview is over. I'm sorry.
No. The degree of Detroit pride and excitement and passion. And again, once we're beginning to just layer in the music now, and the energy of this piece is just so exciting. And I'm so thrilled that that after all the extraordinarily hard work that the cast and crew and dramaturgs and everything put in, that we're finally going to be able to share that with others. And I really hope that it's a memorable and growing experience for absolutely everyone involved.
Thank you. When do we put this on our calendar? How quickly can we get
absolutely.
Tickets?
Absolutely.
Tell us about the details.
Yes. So the show is coming up on April 12th and 13th. That's 7:30 p.m. on both nights, as well as a 2 p.m. show on that Saturday. And tickets are available right now. They're available at hfcc.edu/campuslife/theater. But honestly, if you just Google or Bing or, you know, your preferred way, Henry Ford College and Theater, it's going to pop up. You can get those tickets right online. The tickets are available for $10 for general admission, $5 for students, for seniors, for active military, for HFC employees, etc. And then anyone that we actually interviewed or are involved, we're certainly comping them in. And we really are trying to encourage people who are right there to be part of this conversation as much as possible. But those tickets are available now. And as I had said earlier in this interview, because we are on stage, seating is limited. So we definitely recommend that you get your tickets beforehand. There are no online service fees or anything, so you're not saving anything by waiting until the day. We highly recommend getting those tickets early.
Thank you again. Friday, April 12th, a 7:30 p.m. performance, and then Saturday, April 13th, the matinee at 2, and then the 7:30 evening performance. Tickets on
with
sale.
With the show lasting approximately 1 hour, yes.
Great. Last question. Is there a particular audience that you are hoping to attract, and is there an audience that we should maybe suggest, perhaps maybe not for a certain age group or something like that?
Outstanding question. Language is not too rough. There's nothing that is particularly that, but it is a lot of information that assumes some cultural awareness and things like that beforehand. So if anything, I myself have a 9-year-old and an 11-year-old. And we're my wife and I were having this conversation earlier today, actually. And we decided by having a really important conversation with them beforehand and then having another conversation with them after, this is probably a perfect show for them to come in and have that experience. Really, anyone, if you have a sense that where you live matters, that your community matters, that the fellow people within your community matter, then I hope this is a show for you.
More details at hfcc.edu. This is the Detroit Wall Project, taking place April 12th and 13th here at Dearborn's Henry Ford College, the Adrie Auditorium. We hope to see you all there. Thank you to all of you for your commitment to this this project, to your passion, and for your time today. It was a pleasure talking with you all.
As always, Susan, thank you.
That'll wrap up this edition of the Journal. Please do stay tuned for some great programming forthcoming. I'm Susan McGraw. See you again next week.
Earn your associate's degree in applied sciences with Henry Ford College's Automotive Technology Program. This program offers an in-depth study of multiple systems found in today's vehicles. HFC's Automotive Technology Program is fully certified by the National Institute for Automotive Technology Program by the ASE Educational Foundation. For more information on this or any other area of study, visit hfcc.edu today.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dennis Brown II. I've been doing my share of spreading the word about autism awareness for the past few years. I'm passionate about it because I myself was diagnosed with it as a teenager. In 2014, the number of kids being diagnosed with autism was 1 in 68. The Centers for Disease Control now says that figure has climbed to an estimated 1 in 59. That's an increase of 15% and an overall increase of 64% since the year 2000. Boys are 4 times more likely to be diagnosed with autism than girls. White children are more likely to be diagnosed with it than minority children. Most children are still diagnosed as early as 4 years old. About 50,000 teens with autism are expected to age out of school-based support programs annually. Autism Speaks has information on this and more. Log on to autismspeaks.org or call 888-AUTISM2. That's 888-288-4762. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen.
And we are just about ready for our Highway 61 program with Kitty Love. That's coming up at the top of the hour here on 89.3 WHFR.FM. Hang with us. Thank you. From the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. Next is Highway 61.